Hello again. Great to see you all here today. Any questions or comments after what was discussed yesterday or from your sitting sense?
Yes, thank you. Very quickly, I was not able to speak yesterday because I was in a public place. What's been very present for me is there is this suggestion about dead people who passed away. And the experience for me is has been someone who has been really present during this retreat is someone who is not dead, but in a certain way, it's like that person is dead in the sense that we don't communicate very often, and quite frankly, most of the time that happens because it's kind of difficult to say this, but most of the time I don't even remember that person exists. I'm talking about my father, who is very much alive, due to our paths in life. You know, we didn't establish that sort of relation, father-son relationship that we could expect. So, and I've been really surprised that this is what's been very present for me. I just wanted to share this.
Thank you. Well, I was thinking since yesterday about a famous story that we have in the Buddhist tradition. Sometimes it's called a parable, the parable of the mustard seed. and it's the story of a woman who lost her son and went to the Buddha to have the son brought back to life. so I'll just read the story briefly. It's a brief story. So it's called Kiza Gotami's Mustard Seed. That's the name of the woman, Kiza Gotami. Kiza Gotami came from a poor family, but the son of a wealthy family loved her and married her. Her in-laws treated her unkindly because of her background, but when she gave birth to a son, they finally respected her. Then, when the child was a toddler, he died, and Kiza Gotami went mad with grief. She carried the dead child from house to house, begging for medicine to make him well. And everyone sent her away saying, "The child is dead. No medicine can help him." At last, a kind man directed her to the Buddha. The Buddha said, "I will give you medicine to revive your child if you bring me a mustard seed from a house where no one has died." With renewed hope, Kiza Gotami went forth to get the mustard seed. But at every house, she learned that someone had died. And so, still carrying her child's body in her arms, she returned to the Buddha. Did you bring me a mustard seed? He asked her. She said, I thought that death had happened only to my little son. But now I understand that it happens to everyone. Impermanence is the universal law. She buried her child in the forest and returned to the Buddha to become a member of his community. So there are many versions of this story. They all have that. That's the story. Some are embellished with details about the houses she went to, and one, you know, has, they have different versions of what she said when she came back to the Buddha. And we have this question of why a mustard seed. I think we can say it's because at the time, every house would have a mustard seed. It was just a common thing that was used in cooking at the time. It would be like if you said, bring a pinch of salt from a house where no one has died. Every house has salt. Every house had a mustard seed at the time. And so obviously she could not bring a mustard seed because there was no house where no one had ever died. Someone in everyone's family or friends or relations had died, and everyone was going to die, was the implication. And we often, this story is often used or told in Buddhist teachings because it's so universal. It's also very personal about one woman losing her child. And that's why, you know, I suggested that you make this weekend personal. So some loss, some absence, some grief personally. And yet it's universal. So this story, this story tells about all of us and our experience of grief, our disappointments, our delusions, our identifications with people in our lives. It's particularly difficult because it's a mother who's losing a child, which as a mother, you know, I think must be the most horrible thing you could ever experience. And from other mothers who I know who have lost children, I know that it is terrible. My own mother lost a child before I was born. So I know I carry that with me in my genetics, I suppose. But when we can understand, as Kiza Gotami does in this story, that our personal loss holds within it this universal story, this universal truth of impermanence. We have this great possibility to dissolve the boundaries between I and you and us and them, and even maybe between life and death. Between, as we were saying yesterday, this thin veil we have between life and death, between this realm of the physical and the formless realm. In one of the versions of the stories, she says, Kiza Gotami says something like, what she realizes is, the living are few, but the dead are many. There's far more dead people than living people. Beings, because if we take into account, you know, outside my window, I can see the leaves falling one by one. Out of the corner of my eye, every once in a while, there's a leaf that falls. All of those leaves will fall. They're all falling with that one leaf. all of the people walking by in the street will fall, and they're falling even as they walk. My glass will be emptied. This talk will end. The computer will be turned off. You will get up from your seat and do something else. Everything moves. Everything is changing, and that's impermanence. I wonder if anyone thought about the time last night when you reset your watch, or maybe you have your telephones that do it automatically. Maybe you have both. I had both. And it was interesting to have my telephone, which was still saying the time that of yesterday, but I reset the other clocks before I went to bed, before midnight. And so they were all saying something else, which was right, which was true. The telephone that was still on the Saturday time, or the other clocks that had been reset to the Sunday time. It was actually just this moment right now. It was not Saturday time or the Sunday time. It was just now. And yet the minute was moving on. The clock was ticking, as we say. I couldn't stop the moment. All I could do was take my next breath and be there, present to what was. The cats running around, being wild at night, the rain outside. It's been very rainy here this weekend, although it's not raining today. So again, impermanence. And there's great power in that, in this story of Kizuko Tami, of the shared grief, the shared loss, that death is the great equalizer, we sometimes say. And there's almost a relief in that I'm not the only one. Because we like to think that we are the only one. We are the only one who won't die. We look around us, we see the evidence, everyone will die, but we somehow believe that we won't, or that we might be that exception. Although we don't really believe that either, but we like to convince ourselves of that. And yet it's the great equalizer, because it's one of the most common experiences, like birth. We have all been born, and because we have been born, we all will die. That's the way of all things, the cycle of life. And there's great power in that realization that she has of death is universal. Impermanence is really the basic truth. She says, what does she say? Law. You know, law is almost seems like, you know, something that has to be respected, but in fact it's not. It's just the way things are. You can respect it or not, but that's how it is. You can try to deny it, and we do. You know, cosmetic surgeons make a fortune by helping people to not look there, not look at growing old, not looking at the body changing, the impermanence of this. There's nothing wrong with cosmetic surgery. Why not? But we know what lies behind that in most cases. And it's interesting in this story too that she should come from a poor family and then marries into a wealthy family, and they don't respect her until she has a son. This is a reflection of the times, but you know, that some of that lingers even in our world today of valuing sons over daughters and men over women. And so her entire identity is linked to this son. Her value in the family is linked to the son. She, of course, loves the son dearly. But it's interesting that that should be also that child should be how she gains respect, and then she loses the child. So does that mean she loses her place in the family? Does she lose her respect? Does she lose her sense of self? There's many different losses implied in the story. Although usually they don't insist on those things, although they do point, the stories do point out that detail. So, the living are few, but the dead are many. And so this weekend we're celebrating the dead. We're also celebrating the living in that way. Because what do we do? So what can we do then in the face of this shared grief, this universal impermanence? We fall in love with this moment. We truly care for this moment, these people, this situation in which we live. So because it may be the last, we may never see these people again. I said goodbye to my mother at the airport, and I don't know if 2 weeks ago, almost 2 weeks ago, I don't know if I'll ever see her again. The same is true of all of us. It's not just because my mother is very old and I live far away, but that makes it even more, that brings it home even more, I think, that notion of impermanence. So, anyone have anything to say about this, to share? What does this evoke for you? Debbie?
I have a question about this. First of all, thank you for activating this memory, these memories this weekend. I was very resistant yesterday. I found it very painful, and at the same time, maybe it's best to go through it periodically, the mourning that one has for my parents are dead, my nephew's dead. My question is, when you say there are more dead people than living people, or mm-hmm. I don't have specific beliefs about reincarnation, but where are these people, these dead people? We know where the living are. Mm-hmm. But where, I mean, is, what are we, what are the options for understanding where they are? I just watched, there's a very interesting, if you all are interested, very well done presentation by Leonard Cohen of the Tibetan Book of the Dead on YouTube, which I just saw right before this. And so that makes the question even more of a question to me. Where is everybody?
What does he say, Leonard Cohen, in this?
Well, he's with Tibetans. It's beautiful. He's reciting bits of the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and there's a Tibetan Lama and a young boy who's training to be a lama, who are visiting a man who just died, who's not doing very well. They're going for the 49 days with this guy and the guiding him and everything. So there's the film of these people in Tibet, and then Leonard Cohen reading different passages from the Tibetan Book of the Dead. But the suggestion, of course, in the Tibetans' way of thinking is that we're around and then we come around, or where do we go? I mean, where are these dead people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. The Tibetans, they do have this notion of reincarnation that in the Zen tradition, we don't, that's not how we do things, let's say. I guess I would begin by, so you said we know where the living people are, but we don't know where the dead ones are. Do we know where the living people are? Where are we? Who are we? What does it mean to be alive? What does it mean to be dead? We're just using this term saying all these people are dead. But what does that really mean? If there is, because in the Zen tradition, we tend to say non-born, non-dying. The what is not born does not die. So the forms change, the appearances change, the world of form is impermanent. And yet, you know, we often, like, we say, like I said yesterday, something about passing to the other side or passing away, right? So we can say it's just the form is changing, let's say. But who dies? What dies? I think we have to look there when we say, where are these people? In a sense, these people are no longer as we have known them. And yet, if we've been sitting for I keep saying people, but beings, if we've been sitting with them, they've been here with me all this time. My cat's body was cremated and is sprinkled in my garden. Dust to dust, you know, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. My father's body is buried in a grave somewhere. But someone was saying Miguel was saying about when he touched the body of his brother-in-law and his daughter too, when I saw my father's body, it was so clear to me that that was not him. It was not him there. It was just so clear. And yet that's what we are so identified with, him. And so that's, we put that there, that's him, but it wasn't him. We put things in the casket to go with him, but he wasn't going anywhere. That was not him there. When I say my cat's body, so we return the body, the dust to her garden. It's her garden. So that's where she is. That's where her body went. So I guess we have, when we say, where are they? When the Buddha was asked about existing or not existing, do I exist or do I not exist? He remained silent. And in the face of all these dualities, silence is probably the most appropriate response. Because as soon as we start using words, then we go with one or the other. So, you know, some Zen masters would give a shout, or another one would hit you with a stick, you know, but I can't really do it through the through the screen, but you know, I guess maybe you could, I could ask you the question, well, where are they for you? There's this great song by, which I've talked about before, by Jim Carroll, a great dead poet, American poet, called People Who Died. And he does this great rant with his band. These are people who died. These are people who died. And he lists them all, you know. And these are people he knew. He was living, you know, rough and tumble life in the streets of New York in the 70s and the 80s when New York was a dangerous place. And junkies and, you know, wild people. And these are people who died. And it's just a really true and joyous song, actually, you know? Or like at Auschwitz when we chanted endlessly all throughout the day, every day for 5 days, we took turns chanting, and we had lists of all the people who had been killed at Auschwitz, and we just endlessly read them. We probably didn't finish them. 5 days was probably not enough to finish the list. And when I was doing it, the afternoon I was doing it, it was snowing, huge snowstorm. And we sat there, I was with Roshi and somebody else, I forget. We sat there taking our turns, reading the lists, and the snowflakes were falling. And it was like every snowflake was one of those people. And beautiful snowflakes, they don't fall in another place. That's a koan we have too. Beautiful people, they don't fall in another place. They're each in their own place. And yet it's this universal, it's one life. That's probably not the answer you were hoping for, Debbie, but maybe it will go into your heart and something will emerge. I should have found that video of Jim Carroll and done it as a screen share because it's really good. Seo?
Last weekend, I went to South Portugal to visit after 2 years. The parents from a friend of me. They are my real family. And I think always it's not a beautiful, it's hard when the parents, they are old, they in the nature of the years, they died before us, before me and my friend. But I love this family so much. They are my family. And we were there the weekend. I go because I feel I don't want that something appears, and I think I didn't go there before. Go, it was not, it was a decision to see the parents and to be with them, to take meals with them, to live a weekend at home. And naturally, I don't say these words to them. I leave the moment very normal, very natural. But when I drive to Lisbon, I have thoughts in my mind, alone in my car. And I thought that to bring peace in my heart and in my mind, that when these people died, when these people passed away, they go only before us to arrange the room, to organize the room, to take care of us. And it's a beautiful feeling for me. They go, when they go for us, they go to take care of us. And in this weekend, I take your idea, and I think so much of and my mother. She died not 21 years ago, but 23 years ago. And it's so rich, so rich to think of everything in our life. It's very rich to the thoughts. Thank you for that.
José Eduardo.
Yeah, again. It's interesting because while you were speaking about this famous story of the Buddha, it came into my mind just the opposite that happened with Christ. More than once, I think at least two or three times in the New Testament, you have these miracles of Christ that he comes to perform a miracle to bring life again to the dead people. So it's interesting to see how these two things, maybe they are not opposing each other as stories. What I want to say is that in this big distress in the Bible, you find these people that cannot stand the pain, and Jesus brings the dead to life to appease their pain. So here my point is how do you figure out this? You can say, of course, it's different traditions, or but in a way, Christ is also trying to help bringing people to life again, to appease the people that are suffering. Whereas the Buddha is giving this teaching that, well, that's inevitable anyway, that's universal. Somehow you have to surrender to it. So I wonder how, if you have any thoughts about it. It just was coming to me because in the end, this brings again the same old story that people somehow perhaps want to keep living. I don't know, either doing this cosmetic operations on earth or thinking about a future life somewhere in a better place. I think all this. Wish to preserve as beings is there anyway. Perhaps all all the religions and all the spiritual traditions are an attempt to answer to this big mystery of what is life after all, what is life after death. But anyway, I see these two stories perhaps as opposing or perhaps complementing each other in this big mystery of what is life. So, and what is death, of course. So I wonder how you see this. I mean, how do you see this Christian explanation as being complementary to the Buddhist explanation? Or how you see Christ's explanation, or Christ, not Christ's explanation, Christ's gesture to bring peace to people by helping them to review their dear ones, and not to tell them you just have to face the truth and surrender to it, as the Buddha said. It's just an opening question or a reflection that I like. That's to listen your thoughts about it, or anyone else. I mean,
yeah, it's it does strike to the the heart of these various traditions. I would tend to agree with your point that I think all of the great spiritual practices and traditions are seeking the meaning of life and death. And that's the great mystery that we all face as human beings. And they each have their own ways of approaching it. I don't know so much about these stories, these Christian stories. They are parables as well, and as we know with parables, there are different ways of interpreting them, and we are not to take them at face value necessarily. They're always symbolic and things. So I don't know which ones where he's bringing someone back to life. The one that really speaks to me is about Christ's own resurrection, which in a sense is one of the great mysteries of human civilization, is that throughout, two millennium, there are people who, although we have no evidence of anyone ever doing this, actually believe that Christ physically was resurrected from the dead, which we know is not possible, right? So that's a quite extraordinary thing that all these people believe this. So I think my own sense of the resurrection, and I'm not alone, I've read a lot about this, is that the point is that Christ is resurrected in your heart. That's the point, He takes life in your heart, in our hearts. It's like seeing the equivalent of seeing the universal suffering, and that awakens compassion in your heart or something. So witnessing Christ's death, they say Christ died for our sins and all of this stuff. So taking Christ's life as an example, like we use the Buddha's life as an example, but then manifesting it in your life, in your heart. That's how I see resurrection. I don't know about the other stories. But maybe they're not so different from what the Buddha's stories are. It's just a different way of presenting it, maybe. The Buddha was also trying to ease suffering. He just had different, the way that the stories are told are different, coming from a different place in a different time. Well, kind of almost a different place in time, let's say. And So of course the stories are different because they're coming from a different circumstances. However, I would tend to think that they're going in the same place, to the same, to the one universal truth, whatever, however we want to express that. Anyone else have any thoughts on this? Miguel?
Yes, I think the same. I feel the same. They are saying, they are pointing to the same thing, but to different people and with different approaches. Jesus was addressing or pointing to that universal law through inspiring people, through faith, a practice of faith. And Buddha was, look and see. It's just different approaches. That's what I seem to.
Yeah, good point. Resuming the two approaches, yeah, very much. And actually probably not different, because ultimately the Buddha is asking us to have faith as well, in a very different way. Have faith in ourselves, in a sense, in our experience. In a very different way. And they had different outcomes, because Christ was, as we know, killed for saying these things. And the Buddha, well, you know, there are some versions who say he was poisoned, but not at all in the same context or same situation. Yeah, Miguel.
What I'm feeling is a kind of passage. Like in Portugal, we say the day of All Saints or dead, we call it finados. The day of finados. Finados, it's something that, I don't know the translation, but it's something that ended. And and that's what the passage does, that I'm feeling, it's that. It's something that ended. Of course, things doesn't really end. Something that we see in a certain way or live in a certain way end and transforms in something else. And it's what I'm feeling, the passage. And so something ends and something new begins without having it's a transformation, it's a passage. That's what I'm, something in me, some aspects or ways of seeing, of living, are in the process of ending. And well, I don't know what's coming, and just actualizing myself in that. Yeah, it's this is what I'm feeling. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If I may say something, all of a sudden, it's interesting if we start speaking. I was listening now to Miguel, and what came into my mind, and perhaps you have already said so, is that in fact we are made out of the dead in a way. I think we have said this before, but now it touched me this. Yeah, it's obviously that. If people didn't die before us, if we are not going to die, that there would not be life. In a way, that's how we are. We are dead in a way. We are, of course, our ancestors. And perhaps that is what, in a more secular, I don't know, in a more rational way, we could call it eternity. I don't know. It just came to my mind. It's, but in a way, I am made out of my grandparents. Everyone is made out of people that died. And we are just in line also to perform that role of being the, make this, being the life of future generations. And in this sense, life and death in fact becomes one.
Absolutely. That's it. And then when we think of it that way, it becomes even more crucial that we take care of of life as it is, that we take good care of it. Our planet, for one, because this is our, we're just like this tiny little passage in this whole thing. And yet it's the most important passage ever. Each passage of anyone is always the most important. And yet it's just, we are the dead and we are the living and we are the those to come as well. It's true.
And everything is created by our mind.
That too. That's another one we have. Yes, another koan, right? Okay. It's true. The concept of time, for example. Yeah. Tomas.
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yep.
Sometimes I think, like when death seems frightening, I think of birth and understand when I was born. And when I go back and think, like I was born in conception, I was born when I left my mother, I was born in my first memory. And going back in time, I cannot really spot, because before conception, I was in an egg, and then, so it's like continuity, and it helps me also when looking at death. It's like the same way, but forward instead of backward. So I think that helps me like think a bit on not to be so frightened, because it's like birth, but going forward. So I don't know if it makes sense for you, but that me helps me to make this continuity.
Yeah, really good example. Yeah, that we can all identify with, I think. And it's interesting that you say, because then that eases. It's not so frightening then, or something. It really, that's true. Yeah. Dale?
I just had this great thought about, it just seems like we're all this great compost pile. It's the recycling takes on a whole new meaning. I also wanted to say that I appreciate so much listening to what everybody has to say. It helps me to pinpoint more where my where I get stuck on my own thoughts and my own way of seeing the world. So thank you very much, everybody. And this project of inviting the dead to come into my practice in this weekend is a really surprise to me. I immediately thought of my parents, which surprised me. I've spent much of my life trying to forget my upbringing. And yet both of them came to my mind when you mentioned this practice. And my father died when I was 25 and my mother died over 15 years ago now. It's been really, really interesting and very, very emotional, actually. The idea of them just practicing with them and letting them be. I put a picture of them on my altar and just letting them be in my practice. I haven't been able to really go back into the past, whatever that is. But it's really been interesting. One of the things that I've noticed, however, is there's sort of this sense of healing that is taking place. And it's funny because when you were talking about time, I mean, they've been dead for a long time, and yet I'm practicing now and they're here. I've invited them here. And in the same way, this healing doesn't seem to be happening now, but it seems to be happening in the past when I needed it and when they couldn't give it to me and I couldn't give it to myself. And so, yeah, time has it's really taken on even more significance in that way for me. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah. Time. Yeah.
Actually, yesterday I saw a movie that and my daughter said it was a hit some time ago. Perhaps you have seen it. It's called Wild or something like that. It's a story of someone that goes into the wilderness, a boy. I don't know if you have seen the movie.
Into the Wild?
Into the Wild, exactly. I've seen it. Was the first time I saw it. And then, well, it ends with the reconciliation with the parents when he's dying. If you remember, there's this beautiful scene at the end. It's this wild, wild flowers, and then he dies poisoned, and that's when he's dying, he realizes that even that search, that's I read it anyway, even that search was yeah, in a way incomplete if he could not reconcile with the parents. And that's what is happening at the end. It's very beautiful. I was very moved.
Yeah. Maybe that's I guess we can all hope that we have some moment of grace like that at the moment of dying, that all is forgiven. All is one, we realize. Maybe.
Roshi, can you repeat the name of the song and the singer that you were talking about in the beginning? They're all dead? Or?
Jim Carroll. Carroll, I think it's I think it's two R's, O-L.
Okay.
And it's the song is People Who Died. There's a video on YouTube of it somewhere. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You know, with the, you know, like the, there's so much material out there, Into the Wild, James Joyce, you know, fantastic. His short story, The Dead, is fabulous. The last passages are just some of the most beautiful things written in the English language. endless. The final scenes in American Beauty, where the Kevin Spacey character sees his life pass before him. His, what does he say? My silly little life or something, and yet it's so beautiful. So it's around us all the time, in every moment in all of our lives as well. As Maizumi Roshi says, appreciate your life. And we're out of time.
Roshi,
yeah. Roshi,
you also, you wrote in one of your first books, there's a small poem inspired by Jim Carroll's People Who Died. And it's about, you wrote it after Jim Carroll himself died. And it has some interesting features about it also, as well, that text.
That's true, but, that poem I wrote after Jim Carroll died, actually, yeah. Yeah, thank you for reminding me of that. Yeah. Okay, time's up. And we'll see each other later this afternoon. I think the Jikido, I think Lara will be back this afternoon. So Miguel, thank you for doing it now, but I don't think you'll need to do it then. Be well, everyone, and bon appetit if you're having lunch. We'll see you later. You have to stop the recording, Debbie.